The Torah says, "Bayom Hashmini Atzeret Tiyelachem." The eighth day. We're now moving into the seventh day of Sukkot, Hoshanah Rabbah. Bayom Hashmini, on the eighth day, is Shabbos Atzeret Beyontif Tiyelachem. Kol Melecha Avodah Lo Tasu. Can't do anything. No Melecha. Strange, very, very strange comment that is made by Targum Yonatan ben Uziel. Targum Yonatan ben Uziel says the following: what's the Yontif of Bayom Hashmini? What's so special about this eighth day? Says the Targum Yonatan, Biyoma Timinoa, on the eighth day, K'nishun to heaven b'chedva, you should go in with joy. Min matilchon lebateichon, from your sukkah to your house. Go in with great joy from your sukkah to your house. That's the Yontif of Shmini Atzeres. What a perplexing statement is made here by Targum Yonatan ben Uziel. First of all, usually there is joy when one leaves a permanent dwelling and goes up a temporary dwelling place and goes back into home with all of its comforts. Of course there's joy. But is that enough reason to turn a day into a chag, into a yontif? It even leaves the impression as though, chas v'sholom, as you know, potter from the sukkah already. Yeah, we had enough. And with great joy, sort of like a child running out of school, I'm finished with the sukkah, I'm getting out, I'm going back home. Targum Yonatan ben Uziel certainly didn't have that in mind. There's another problem with Shmini Atzeres, which will ultimately be the main point of this shiur. And that is, Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkot commemorate great events. Pesach, the Exodus, Shavuos, revelation at Mount Sinai, Sukkot, 40 years in the desert. These are great cataclysmic events that remind us of wondrous miracles that God did for us, and of course we therefore, but it's right, it's correct, that we should mark these days and we should express our thanks and our gratitude to the Rebbeinu who did all of these things for us. And even the agricultural aspects of the Yom Tovim, the harvest, first fruits, the asif, ingathering, all of these are reasons for celebration, they're reasons for thanksgiving. But returning to your house from being in the sukkah, what kind of yom tov is that? Furthermore, we only left the house because God told us to leave the house and go to the sukkah. Now he suspends it. We don't have to anymore. All right, so you go back home, that's it. But is this reason for a yom tov? B'yomo t'minoa, on the eighth day, you should go with joy from your sukkah into your house. I'm going to spend the next few minutes on an introduction that will ultimately bring us back to exactly what we want to talk about, and that is Shmini Atzeres. There's more to be said, and I'm going to take you on a little journey and then bring you back. Pesach and Sukkot are both Zeche L'Yitziyat Mitzrayim, a commemoration for the Exodus of Egypt. Simple question. Why do we need two Yom Tovim to mark the same event? Torah says,
With regard to sukkahs, v'sukkos teishu shivas yomim, kol ha'ezer b'yisroi, you should sit in sukkahs for 7 days. Levan yedu dorotechem, in order that all of your generations should know, ki basukkot ho shafti et b'nei Yisrael, that I had Jews living in sukkahs, v'hotzio tam eretz mitzrayim, when I took them out of the land of Egypt. What does the Torah say about Pesach? Shomer Chodesh Aviv, you should keep the spring, the holiday of the spring, you should make Pesach, because during the spring God took you out of Egypt. Lo tochel alav chametz, you don't eat chametz. You eat matzah lechem only. Keep the chipazon, because in haste got sotem in Mitzrayim. Leman, tizkar et yom, tzeitcha, me'eretz Mitzrayim, kol yimei chayecha. In order that you should remember the day that you left Egypt, all of your life. Why two chagim? Why two yom tovim that seem to be commemorating precisely the same thing? We have only one yom tov that commemorates revelation at Mount Sinai. There's one Hanukkah and there's one Purim. Why two yom tovim for Yitzhak Mitzrayim? Sefer by Judah ben Tzion Fira, Elohim Moadai makes a very, very fascinating comment. He says, yes, both Pesach and Sukkot are both Zechel Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but different aspects of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And if we listen to the Pasuk, the Psukim carefully, we hear it. Pesach is l'man tizkor, in order to remember Yom Tzeitcha, the day that you went out of Egypt. Sukkis is l'man yedu dorotechem, in order that all of your generations shall know that you lived in Sukkot b'hotzi'i, when I took you out. It means that Pesach commemorates the day of the Exodus. Sukkis represents everything that comes afterwards. Because after that Exodus comes the great journey of Klal Yisrael throughout all of history. And that journey, in its first stage, the 40 years in the Midbar, difficult, harsh conditions. All of difficult 40 years, with the Amanei HaKavod, with the clouds of glory, but it's a journey. It's a journey. And the idea of Sukkot is to remind, to encourage, to give strength to Jews at whatever moment they find themselves in history. We have the Rebbeinu Shem on our side. The journey of 2,000, 3,000, all the years in Golos, the return to Eretz Yisrael, all of these have been years of difficulty, of threats to our very survival. This is the kind of journey you need strength, you need courage, you need patience. I think it was best expressed in one of the songs that was sung by our young people during the period of the exile from Gush Katif. Am HaNetzach Lo Mefached Miderech Aruka. Am HaNetzach, an eternal people, Lo Mefached, is not afraid of a long journey. The day of the Exodus begins that long journey. We have to learn never to despair, never to lose hope, never to lose sight of the goal, of the objective. The journey to Geula, to ultimate Geula, requires patience, faith, trust in a Rabbeinu Shel Olam, to know that he is there as he hovers with the Anani HaKavod, the clouds of glory, that Sukkala Akleina from Breit Alech Gemeine, that little Sukkah. There's a Rebbeinu Shem was there. And that journey is one with a great deal of suffering. There are setbacks,
there are stumbling blocks, and far worse than that. And then there are moments that we stand up and we move and we make great strides forward. So Sukkos talks about what? All that happens from the moment of Exodus and further. And if we get a little unnerved by the difficulties that Klal Yisrael faces through history, so we have guests who come into the sukkah, and each one of them tells us a story. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, boy, did they have a great deal to tell. They can tell us, we lived in Eretz Yisrael, but Eretz Yisrael was not ours. It was promised to us, but in a sense we were like strangers in what would ultimately become our own land, but it wasn't. Yosef, of course, can tell us the story of being taken into exile in chains, only to return to Eretz Yisrael to be buried here. Moshe and Aaron wanted nothing more than to enter Eretz Yisrael, and Moshe and Aaron come in and they say, we didn't make it, but those who come after us did make it. Tonight is the Ushpizin of David. David is the one who says, we made it. The first time around, we made it. It took a long time. There were a lot of difficulties. You need strength, you need courage, you need faith to make that journey that's represented by the sukkah. If Pesach tells us the praise of the Redeemer and all that he did for us, Sukkot comes to tell us about the redeemed. Zochartu lo chesed miurayich ahavat klulotayich lechteich acharay pamidbar. You know what Sukkot is saying? Not only that God hovered over us with the clouds of glory, but that we went out into that desert with absolute faith. I remember the kindness of your youth, that you went out into that barren desert. So if Pesach speaks of God, Sukkot speaks of Klal Yisrael. It may very well be that one of the halachas of Sukkot is mitzta'er is potim in asukkah. If one is uncomfortable or in pain or has difficulty sitting in the sukkah, you don't have to sit in the sukkah. If somebody has difficulty with the process of geula, if somebody finds it uncomfortable, then you know what? Then maybe he doesn't or shouldn't be part of it. When I look at this halacha of mitzta'er potum nanasukah, the person who is in pain, doesn't have to fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, I am reminded of a Psak Halacha, Rabbi Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik, who both paskin that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, is not an obligatory mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah chiyuvit. It's not something you have to do, but if you do it, you fulfill the great mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. I have a feeling that what that Psak Halacha is saying is, if you just can't separate yourself from the lifestyle of wherever you are, whatever that means, if it's just too difficult for you, then you know what? Maybe you don't belong here. Mitzta'er, here, Eretz Yisrael is the great sukkah, the great sukkah where God takes care of us. There are certain mitzvahs, if you're not up to it, you're not part of it. If you have courage, and you have determination, and you have trust, and you have faith, able to make a leap of faith, and maybe a little tinge of mishugas, comes in very, very handy.
The halacha, with regard to sukkah, the halacha is that for a sukkah to be kosher, tzils of the shade is more than the sun. Jewish history has been more shade than sun. More clouds, more difficulties. But ultimately, that great day when the light of God will burst forth, that day is coming. The schach is supposed to be not too thick, not too heavy, so that you should be able to see the stars. I believe the meaning of it is, you want to make the journey that is represented by sukkah, you have to have vision. You have to be able to look heavenward and see that there are great things coming. And if you want to be part of it, then you're going to have to be ready to shoulder the burden and march with Klal Yisrael toward Gula. Pesach, the great moment of the Exodus from Egypt. Sukkot, the journey through the desert. Both of them represent great historic events. There's a third event. A third event. And that event is Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres is the yontif of entering Eretz Yisrael. The first Yom HaAtzmaut. You know what Targum Yonatan is saying? Targum Yonatan is saying, with great joy, you're going to go from your temporary dwellings into the permanent dwelling, Eretz Yisrael. Take a look. Take a look at what Shmini Atzeres is all about. During all of Sukkot, we bring 70 sacrifices for the nations of the world. And Shmini Atzeres, one par, the Rebbein Shem, it's just me and you. The Rebbein Shem says, kosher like pridaschem, I can't separate from you. Let's be together. It's amazing, just take a look. What do we read? What do we read on Simchas Torah? We read Parsha Zos HaBracha. Zos HaBracha. What's the end of Zos HaBracha? Ayal Moshe Miyarvot Moab. Moshe went up from the plains of Moab, El Har Nevo, Rosh HaPisgah, to the top of the mountain, Asher Alpanei Yireichol, and God showed him at Kol HaAretz et HaGilot Vadon. This is what we're going to read. He showed him all of the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, all of the land of Yehuda, until the furthest sea, the south, Bikat Yireichol. This is the land that I swore to Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, saying, "Lizarach to your children, I'm going to give this land." What's the Haftorah for Simchas Torah? The Haftorah for Simchas Torah is the first chapter in Yahushua, the final preparations that are being made for the entry into Eretz Yisrael. All of Israel, flags unfurled, there they are, along the Jordan, getting ready to go into to Eretz Yisrael. We have Hakafis on Shmini Atzeres and Simchat Torah. We have Hakafis. Where were their Hakafis in Tanakh? The first conquest in Eretz Yisrael was Yericho. 7 days, seven times, and they went around with the Oron, and we commemorate that, those Hakafas, we commemorate them, because Shmini Atzeres is the yontif of going from the temporary residence into the permanent one, and it has to be done b'chedva, with great joy. And then, of course, we learn Bereshis. How is it possible to come to Bereshis? What do you think about when you read the first pasuk in Bereshis? My students all know that first great Rashi
that first great Rashi in Bereishis, Somer Rabbi Yitzchak Lo Hoyer Tzorach Lahatchil Et HaTorah El Me'achodesh Hazeh Lachem Shehi Mitzvah Rishona Shenitztavu Bo Yisrael U'matam Pasach B'Bereishis Korach Ma'asav Igid Liyamo. Rashi begins by saying, why was the whole story of creation told to us? Torah is a book of legislation. Legislation begins only in Sefer Shemot, in Parshat Bo, HaChodesh HaZelachem, this month shall be the first of months. Why did the Torah begin with the story of creation? And what does Rashi say? God shows his people, demonstrates to them the strength of his works. He created the world, and he gave lands to those whom he chose. And then, you know what he did? He took the land from them, and he gave it to us. Bereishis is the story of our right to Eretz Yisrael. That's Shmini Atzeres. The whole Shmini Atzeres is turning into a yontif, as Targum Yonatan so beautifully says it. On that eighth day, we mark going from our permanent residence into our, from our temporary residence into our permanent residence with great joy. And I'll tell you, I was thinking about that Rashi. Every time I get to that Rashi, something else strikes me. That first Rashi. And I want to explain that first Rashi with another Rashi. There's a Rashi that's unknown. And I decided about a year or two ago that we're going to make this Rashi known. Understand? You maybe didn't first hear it here. The Rashi's been there in Chumash for the last 900 years. But you know, sort of, sometimes you just need to take the Rashi out and present it to the world. It says the following. At the end of Parshat Bo, one of the psukim that appears in the Tefillin, the Arba Parshas, and it says the following: "V'hoyoki yivyacha Hashem el eretz haKnani." And it come to pass when God brings you to the land of the Knani, "Kashen nishba lecha v'lavotecha," as He swore to you and to your fathers. U'nitana lach, and he will give it to you. Rashi is troubled by the really extra two words, u'nitana lach. He's going to bring you to the land that he swore to your fathers to give to you. Says Rashi the following, tehei beinecho ki ilu nitno lecho bo bayom. A Jew has to feel as though Eretz Yisrael was given to him today. A new gift. I received it today. Thou tehi beinecha. Eretz Yisrael should not be in your eyes ki yerushat avos, like something that I inherited from my fathers. An inheritance. Easy come, easy go, doesn't necessarily have great value, but when I take a look at it as though the Rebbein Shem gave it to me today, our attitude would be a completely different attitude to Eretz Yisrael. What struck me this time is Rashi has the same phrase that he has at the end of the first Rashi. He took it from them, unetana. Lach, and gave it to you. Here the pasuk says, "Unetana lach." And you know what the "unetana" and "he gave it to you" means? That you have to feel that he gave it to you today. And if you receive that great gift today, this is something that one cherishes. You know what was brilliant about our rabbis? They took this day, which represents the entry into Eretz Yisrael, and they made it Simchat Torah. They turned or added to the Shmini Atzeres, which is the Yontif of entry into Eretz Yisrael, and they made it Simchas Torah, because they want to tell you for all time, without Torah there's no Eretz Yisrael. Without Torah, we are no more than some Middle Eastern country, a third world banana republic, that is trying to ape the worst of Western or Eastern culture. All the not good things. All of that stuff is brought here, but that's not Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is Torah. And if we are going to have an Eretz Yisrael, that Eretz Yisrael has to be one that is infused with Torah, Simchas Torah, Shmini Atzeres, the two of them together. One of the things that has been on my mind for a while now. It may seem that I'm digressing. I'm not digressing. You'll know exactly what I have to say. We've become a people, and for that matter, many people, are people who live with slogans. I want to describe what a slogan is. A slogan is a powerful tool or a weapon. A slogan can be very good or very bad. A slogan captures the essence of an idea, encapsulates it into a few brief words, carefully chosen for maximum impact. The slogan is easily and effortlessly absorbed into one's consciousness and usually stays there unchallenged, comfortably ensconced and quite impervious to reason. Wendell Willkie once said, "A good catchword can obscure analysis for 50 years." A thing, something else, I was thinking about slogans. I remembered something, and it was from my childhood, And at least today, you know, all you do is you go to Google and you can find whatever you want. What was it that's coming through my head? The English don't have to know what I'm talking about. Tippecanoe and Tyler too. If you don't know what Tippecanoe and Tyler 2 is, I'll explain to you. I can explain to you Targum Yonason. I can explain to you Tippecanoe and Tyler 2. There was a campaign for the American presidency in 1840. The fellow who was running for president was William Henry Harrison, and his running mate was a fellow called John Tyler. Now, some 27 years earlier, William Henry Harrison had a major victory over the Indians in Tippecanoe, the Tippecanoe River. Now, it was a shtickle hero. There were those who were opposed to him. A lot of men died in battle. You know, maybe it wasn't worth the whole bit. Anyway, here it is, it's 26, 27 years later, and he's running for the American presidency, and somebody comes up. It must have been the first one in history, they think. Somebody came up with a slogan. Harrison is Tippecanoe. His running mate is Tyler. Tippecanoe and Tyler too. Tippecanoe and Tyler too. It went like wildfire through America. People were no longer concerned who Tippecanoe is. They weren't concerned who Tyler was. It just fired the imagination. It meant nothing. Didn't tell you anything about anybody. The last sentence in this printout that I have says the following. This was a line repeated in thousands of households by hundreds of thousands of people. Humans who are ready and primed to get swept up by patriotism that rhymed. It is an important century and a half old echo because it perhaps marked the death of careful thought on the voter side of the election process. It marked the death of thought on the voter side of the election process. If you came up with a good slogan, you won the day. We quoted Wendell Willkie. Edward R. Murrow said, "Our major obligation is not to mistake slogans for solutions." Charles M. Schulz said, there's a difference between a philosophy and a bumper sticker. You want Robert Louis Stevenson? I'll give you Robert Louis Stevenson. "Man is a creature who lives not upon bread alone, but primarily by catchwords." The bane of our existence, I believe, are slogans. There are great slogans, and there are destructive slogans. I believe the greatest slogan of all time is the one composed by the Rabbeinu Shlomo himself: "Let my people go." Every great movement for freedom throughout history, from Yetzias Mitzrayim to the collapse of the Russian Empire, the Soviet Union, all fueled by "Let my people go." When Israel was in Egypt land, "Let my people go." Negro spirituals: "Let my people go." Shalach et ami v'yavduni is a slogan that has inspired movements for freedom, bringing down totalitarian states throughout all of history. There are other slogans: "Hashomer Ochi Anochi," "Am I my brother's keeper?" I'm afraid that that also made its way uncomfortably into the psyche of human beings. Can people always answer that question? Well, are there times that people are not Shomer Achi? I mean, how much is the world talks about Darfur and does nothing about Darfur? What has the Christian church done in all those countries where Christians are being persecuted? I have a feeling that Jews have a better record, but not a crystal clean record. So you have a Shomer Achi Anochi, and you have "Let my people go." You also have "Am HaNetzach Sukkis." "Am HaNetzach Eino Mefached Miderech Arukah." An eternal people is not afraid of a long journey. A slogan, a good slogan, should have a rhythm, a ring, and a charm about it. It may express some succinctly what one has been thinking but could never put into words. It may introduce a new idea and then proceed to engrave it on the hearts and minds of the population. A truly successful slogan is one that endows the one who adopts it and embraces it with the feeling that he belongs to a special group. He may belong to some kind of an intellectual elite. And to him it doesn't make any difference that there are another million guys that are using the same slogan. But it sort of gives him entree into this world. Second World War. "Loose lips sink ships." I remember billboards. I came from Williamsburg. And I remember on Lee Avenue, at the corner of Lee and Roebling, there was a big, big sign with a color picture of a boat going down in the Atlantic: "Loose lips sink ships." There are some slogans that are two words. During the Second World War, there was a slogan of two words. And that's, those two words most probably made more difference to world history than any other. Unconditional surrender. Unconditional surrender. There will be no talking of peace with Germany and Japan. The fight goes until there's unconditional surrender. Roosevelt's problem was that he didn't have the advice of our Chachumen over here who say, there's no military solution. That's another one of the slogans here. There's no military solution. And I hear people say there's no military solution. We have to talk, we have to talk, we have to negotiate, we have to negotiate. What do you mean there's no military solution? Unconditional surrender was a military solution. The most harmful slogan of all, and this brings us to Shmini Atzeres, the most harmful and destructive slogan of all, land for peace. Land for peace. Did anybody stop to analyze it? So many people told me about land for peace, land for peace. We've been giving land and giving land, we have no peace. What land? Who wants the land? Why do they want the land? Who even thinks about that? Land for peace. That's the policy of the Israeli government. Land for peace. And every time we give another bit of land, we get more war. You know why? Because they don't see, Unetan Allah, as Rashi says, look at Eretz Yisrael as though it was given to you today. It's not Yerush HaSavos. I'm afraid to say, it's Hashanah Rabbah, the Rosh Hashanah should forgive me. But when the head of Hamas said, we will never relinquish one inch of our land heritage, not an inch. You know what I thought to myself? That man's a man. He has he stands for something. He believes in something. And we're, I don't understand. I don't know what's going on with us. Huh. And then, wait a minute. The great one. Restraint is strength. Ipuk zekoach. This was Sharon's great one. You know what that Ipuk meant all of those years? That they permitted Hezbollah to entrench themselves in the north. That restraint cost us Jewish lives. But you know, it was quoted time and time again. Restraint is strength. You only make peace with enemies. Yeah. What nonsense. What absolute nonsense. You can't make peace with enemies. You can make peace with enemies who want to make peace. You can make peace with enemies who want to become friends. But you can't make peace. You can't make peace with enemies. What I'm calling for is the idea that we have to think clearly. The land for peace, by the way, I want to correct something. I won't have enough time to explain it fully, but I want to explain something that was never understood, and I don't think people wanted to understand it. They didn't want to understand it, that's why it wasn't understood. There was a great blood libel against the right during the course of the last 13, 14 years. The truth is, it started much earlier. A piece of land is worth more than a Jewish life. You understand what we're accused of? The one who's ready to relinquish land is one who cares about Jewish lives. The one who's not ready and is going to stand firm, no land, He doesn't care about Jewish lives. By the way, first of all, the reality is precisely the opposite. We lost thousands of lives every time we gave up land. Every time. But I went back to the halacha. There were two great responses that were written about land for peace. One was written by Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, which was used as the excuse for Oslo, and the other was written by Rav Shaul Yisraeli, who disputed Rav Ovadia Yosef. And I'm ready to bet that 99% of the people who quoted Rav Ovadia Yosef's tshuva never read it. 99.5% never read it. Rav Ovadia's conclusion is that if, these are his words, if we don't give up land, there will be immediate war. And if we give up land, there will be shalom emet. You understand? You hear the words. Then you give up land. Those conditions were never met. Never ever met. Rav Shaul Yisraeli writes, and the fact is, anyone who studies halacha sees it clearly. The halacha says the very act of giving up land is going to endanger Jewish lives. It's built into the halacha. A border town, you're mechal Shabbos in order to defend a border town, even from people who come to steal. Because if a border city falls to the enemy, it opens up all of Yisrael, all of Eretz Yisrael to grave danger. It's a whole different approach. Giving up land is in and of itself the greatest danger. So you know what it really means? The ones who are ready to give land for peace are the ones who brought about the deaths of so many people. And those of us who said, no, you can't do it, we were the ones, if they would have listened to us, there would be many more Jews alive today than there are. We lost lives every time. But this was a blood libel. I tell you, just now it comes flying through my head. I was rabbi in West Hempstead, young Israel of West Hempstead. I don't know how somebody succeeded in doing it, but we had as a guest for Shabbos Rabbi Meir Kahana Shen in Kom Tamo. And I had a bunch of leftists over there, Freidenicht. And they came to Shul's jammed to the rafters. They came ready to debate him, but what they didn't know is he was a master. Somebody gets up and says, what do you mean we have to give up the West Bank to save lives? He didn't go into any longest, like I said. Well, he said, would you give up the Kotel? The guy finished. The guy was wiped out. There's nobody who's ready to say, yes, I'll give up the Kotel if they want the Kotel. So it means there's a... It was just a classic comeback. We have to become intelligent people. I see exactly what's happening right now. You should know the left is going to push for negotiations with Syria, ready to give up the Golan Heights, because there's another truism, a slogan. And I read it four times this week. We can't permit a vacuum. There has to be activity. Can't permit a vacuum. In a vacuum, who knows what's going to happen? So here at the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, I presented, I'm only going to give it to you briefly, I'm going to present what I consider to be my agenda for the state of Israel for the next 10 years. I'm not running for office. But I want to tell you, I think that the state of Israel should simply say, we are concentrating inward. There's a great deal to be done in this country. And the only way the Jewish people will become what Yeshayahu calls the light unto the nations, that's another good slogan, a light unto the nations, is if we turn our society here into a society of justice, of honesty, of integrity. We have to wage all our battle against crime, against all of the problems that we have in government. Corruption. We have to fight corruption. We have to fight poverty. We have to fight carnage on the roads. Unbelievable. The same mistakes are made by Mishugoyim all the time, and Jews are being killed day after day. There's no way, in other words, there is a way to get 50,000 soldiers in order to throw 10,000 Jews out of their homes, and not a single permanent dwelling has yet been built for them a year later. What happens when we have 50,000 soldiers out on the highways? We have to fight the carnage on the roads. We have to fight violence in the home. We have to fight violence in the schools. I remember one day seeing a cartoon in the Haaretz where a mother is sending off her little bicycle to school. So he has his lunchbox. She makes sure he has a sweater, and then she asks, and your knife, you have that too? All right, okay. That's what you need in order to go to school. Shana Nacharpa. Poverty we have to fight. A 500,000 children should not have enough food. It's unbelievable. In modern day Eretz Yisrael, I think we have to spend 10 years. We can let the world know, let Assad know the Prime Minister's phone number, know exactly where to get in touch, an email address. If you're ever seriously interested in peace, just be in touch with us and we'll see if there's anything to talk about. But during the next 10 years, we're going to work day and night in order to make this a better society. We're going to wage all-out war against all of the ills and the evils of this society. What are you talking about? Drugs, alcohol. I mean, I don't want to list all of the tzaras that we have, but we have all these tzaras. And any effort and energy that we could expend on working toward making this a better society, a society that would indeed be a society of Yahavta L'Reyacha Kamocha, an Eretz Yisrael Al Pi Toras Yisrael, a Shmini Atzeres together with a Simchas Torah, so that we should indeed turn the idea of coming from the temporary dwelling into the permanent dwelling with Simcha. We have to turn this place able to do. With all of our genius and with all of our brilliance, if we would turn harness all of that great effort, the energy, the intelligence, into making this a better society, it will be the greatest society on the face of this earth. That's exactly what the Nevi'im wanted. That's what they were talking about. They were talking about a Yerushalayim in which there's justice, in a Yerushalayim in which there's honesty, in which there's integrity, a Yerushalayim in which one can trust a fellow. You think that we don't have a lot to do in terms of employer and employee relationships? You take anything you want. Any area of life you want. It needs improvement. Some have to be overhauled completely. Don't tell this outside of this room, but I'll tell you, when I see a piece of paper on the street in Yerushalayim, it's like a dagger in my heart. This is the living room of the Rebbeinu Shalom. It's God's living room. I don't want to mention any communities or streets by name, but those close to me, I can't take it. The mamish makes me sick. And I wonder why other people don't have this feeling. This is the Rebbeinu city. This is Yehat Zedek. This should be the greatest, cleanest city in the world. That's my agenda. My agenda, therefore, is that we've gone on this long journey together. It started on Pesach, the Exodus. We stopped at Har Sinai to pick up Torah. We made our way through Sukkot, and on Shmini Atzeres we entered into Eretz Yisrael. We've entered Eretz Yisrael now for the third time. We got to make it. We got to make it work this time. We do have a promise that the Rebbeinu will never exile us again, but there's a great deal that he expects of us to do. And that has to be done, first of all, by a Shmini Atzeres entering Eretz Yisrael with Toras Yisrael. It has to be one where we are able to think clearly and not live by slogans. We have to be able to question and look at our situation intelligently and not be overwhelmed by what is being said out there in the world. Yiras Hashem, the event that we will be able to have the intelligence and the sensitivity to do that, Yiras Hashem, to the Mar Hasim and Teva. You should all have a beautiful, beautiful Yantif, and let's hope that this year, tomorrow, is the Gemar Katima, end of our suffering at the beginning of far greater days for Klal Yisrael. Chag Sameach.